Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, people? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. I'm excited about this one. This week on the podcast, we've got Sophia Kearney and Stephen Brains. Both of these guys have started a brand called He, She, They, which I believe originally started as a fashion label, then a club night, and then a record label. I got into them through the record label, which I believe started in 2020, releasing some amazing artists. And then my manager, Ryan, put me in touch with them to kind of get them on the podcast to talk about the events that they do and everything else that they do. They do so much. But He, She, They is about an inclusive club night that allows everybody from trans, queer communities, black, white, anybody to be a part of it and party and have an amazing time and let people be free, which really is important to me in all life, but especially the dance community. They also have a management company called Weird and Wonderful, and their roster is ridiculous. So go and check that out as well. They look after some amazing artists. So let's get to it. Sophia and Stephen. Right, Sophia, Stephen, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. How are you guys?
Good, thanks. Thank you for having us.
Good.
It's good to meet you guys, because really when I do a podcast, I think there's maybe one other podcast that I've done where I've like never met the people that I'm actually talking to. So it's like kind of weird. I was just like, I've been doing a bit of research into you guys as people.
And a little stalking there, Will.
100%.
And like I just
followed you guys on Instagram as well and was like, yeah, I need to get the stalk on even more. but I first of all, Stephen, dancing butt naked in Manumission. I want to start with that. Because
I didn't have my dick out, but everything else.
Okay, that's enough.
Again, technically,
just a cheeky bollock,
just a hairy duck egg. It's fine. We're allowed.
Not even.
I listened to your RA exchange, and it was really interesting. I hadn't finished it, but I was listening to like how you guys started, and
Yeah, it's quite long, isn't it? Yeah.
It's good though. It's good because I think it's like a really nice introduction on who you guys are. Because I think being managers, event organizers, record label owners, fashion brand owners, like, you're always behind the scenes, right? And you're never kind of the front people. And it's only behind the scenes people that know who you are. And I think it's really interesting for people to actually find out who the people are behind the people that we all love and watch and things like that. Which really, it's really interesting to kind of get you guys on. And I've been following the label for a long time. And I didn't actually know you did events, and I just knew the label more so than the events. Because
I kind of love that, actually.
Yeah. And for me, like, when Ryan, my manager, hit me up and was like, would you be interested in getting these guys on? I was like, absolutely. This is, like, amazing. And then he was like, oh, they do these cool, real cool events. And I was like, cool. And then I looked into it and was like, damn, these parties look insane. Where did it all start with the parties? That's what I want to know.
The parties was kind of not supposed to be the first piece of the jigsaw, but yeah, it ended up becoming so. Like, originally we just really wanted to start a fashion house and have like some really cool clothes, like, you know, high-end streetwear, that kind of vibe that was you know, vegan, environmentally friendly, like no sweatshops, like gender neutral. That was kind of like the idea. And then we thought, oh, well, we'll be able to throw the coolest fashion parties, like when we do stuff at London Fashion Week, because of our connections and everything like this. And then, you know, at the same time, we had always been frustrated with the state of a lot of like global events that we'd visited with our artists. Obviously, being managers, we sort of stand there sort of making sure obviously our artists are okay and have everything they need, but it means you get a prime view from the booth of the dance floor and what's everything that's going on at the event. And so it sort of merged. It ended up being promoters, when we were pitching the idea, kind of really sticking their hand up for the parties, and we realized actually there was a lot of appetite for people to want to throw something and to make things more diverse and more aligned with those with the queer community, and just to make everything more intersectional in general behind the decks and therefore on the dance floor. And it kind of, but a lot of people weren't sure how to do that maybe authentically from, and we were in a unique position with like our artist roster is kind of primarily queer, female, people of color. And like it's all very natural to us. It's kind of what we live and breathe anyway. So it's just about bringing what we love and what we do into a more mainstream space to try and affect some cultural change, really. And it all just sort of ended up happening all at once.
It's kind of amazing, because I was looking at your roster as well beforehand, and obviously I'm friends with some of them on there, and I didn't even know you managed some of them as well. And the roster that you guys look after, is even the straight ones, straight ones, it sounds so weird saying that, but that even they're like weird and wonderful. They're like very interesting characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have other artist managers who work with us at the Win, wonderful Craig and Paul and LJ, and like previously Marisa as well. So like everyone who we work with, both on the manager side and all the artists that everybody manages, is everyone is truly an artist in their own right, and avant-garde in their own way, and unique in their own way. And as you say, like weird and wonderful, that is kind of the talent that we that is drawn to us and that we're drawn to equally. So
I love it,
Will, so it's not like we're not against, for instance, like straight white men. All the thing is, for instance, right, if you go to your traditional non-declaratively queer space is normally like three straight white men DJing.
Yeah.
And if you've got dancers, it's women. But then also, if you go to a queer space declaratively, so normally it's three queer white men.
Totally.
So and then male dancers. So our thing is like, for instance, if you take it from the experience of like a black gay woman in either of those spaces, maybe it's not that they're told that they can't come, or that, like, they're of course welcome to be there, but there's a difference between being allowed to come to a space and being declaratively like, this is a space for you. Mm-hmm. So same thing with our roster and stuff. It's not that we're against any one type of person. It's just talent isn't the preserve of one type of person. So we go in and diversify spaces so that they're accessible and open to everyone. And same with our roster and everything. Like, it's like Sophia says, our friend group's really diverse. Yeah. So it's very natural. It's not like, oh, we're just going to manage people like this. It's just, they're the people in our orbit naturally when you've got more of a diverse friend set.
Totally. It's what Sophia said. It's very authentic. And I think you can kind of see that from the outsets. Is there's lots of, like we all know, there's lots of promoters worldwide that try to do things just because it's politically correct. And it's not authentically done. It's not because they necessarily believe in it. It's because they actually just want to do what they feel like they have to do. And
it may also be like, I totally agree with you. There's definitely those instances. There's also instances of people really wanting to do the right thing, but just being so unconnected personally anything to do with that world that it ends up looking performative or box ticking or, you know, they don't have the networks to, you know, it should always be talent first, always, always, always. But if they don't have nowhere to go to research or know who to ask for things to be authentic, then that can be a shame. And like we've noticed that with so many willing promoters, but coming to us and going, but how do we? And then they'll pitch us ideas and there'll be a couple of their ideas. It's like, yeah, that really works. That's going to look like that or feel like that if you book it like this. What about this? And so some people are really, really open and wanting to change and do things. So just want to like applaud all the people out there that are actually have the best intentions. And that's why we really enjoy working with like those more mainstream clubs like Fabric, like Ministry, like Pasha, like Watergate. Like there's loads of clubs globally. And we do, if we're throwing all of our parties in like warehouses in East London, then we are just preaching to a choir.
Totally.
And we threw a party in Fabric like 2 weeks ago. And we hadn't been in London for like a big show since like before the pandemic. So it was a really special night. And I just noticed, like when I'm walking around the club with the hosts, our performers, hosts, that kind of names interchangeable, but there's so many incredible people and they're all in the most incredible looks. And you couldn't move for 15 seconds without a member of the audience who probably they're not used to seeing sort of hosts and performers like this at, when they come to Fabric on a Saturday night. We just couldn't believe it and loved it so much and was so complimentary. Like it was really beautiful to see. And when I was up at the door waiting for people to come in, one of the first girls that came in, as soon as the doors opened, they asked her to take off her jacket to be searched. And she had this full like body harness on. And I said to her, I said, you look incredible. Like, that's amazing. She said, oh, I'm really nervous. I said, it's all good. Just give it 30 minutes. Give it 30 minutes. Have a little drink at the bar. Before you know it, you're going to forget that you're even wearing it because everyone is going to be the same.
Yeah.
And that was the case. Like seeing like so many of the audience in looks at Fabric. Because you sort of sit behind a laptop and you're like squirreling away and you're doing all these things and you're putting out these records, you're booking these parties, you're pushing this message, having a million and one Zoom calls and whatever. But then it kind of took me aback a little bit to be in Fabric again after so long and actually see people really embracing the concept and coming together and, you know, they're being able to be like all different types of people in the same space. And the energy in there all night was incredible. And it was the first time we'd done two rooms and it was absolutely packed. So it was really life affirming really after the pandemic to have that show. It was great.
I can imagine. I went
off on a massive tangent there, but there you go.
And sometimes we don't work with people if we feel that they're like, they're kind of, they want to do it, it's like nefarious. Like, on the whole, like, if someone just doesn't really, like, knows they want to do something, or need to do something but doesn't know how, like, totally into helping.
Yeah.
If it's just because they want to cash in and exploit community, it's not into that. So, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. one of our big things is that we'll only do Friday and Saturday nights in clubs.
Yeah.
Because we want, like, the beacon night, not mm-hmm. just, like, or you can't really make money on a Thursday or a Sunday.
So let's get...
So you'll yeah. invite the queer community or have more women in or whatever. It's like, nah, man, put your money where your mouth is. And I think that brings real change. Like, Fabric, 7 out of the 8 DJs were female.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and it still sells out Fabric.
Mm.
And it's not just Emily Lenz or Peggy or yeah. Charlotte, like, who are all great, but I feel like...
It's gone past it with them, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It's they are just that they're bigger than DJs now. They're icons.
They're massive, and it's great. But it's like it's this weird like there's only allowed to be like 5 women, and exactly. then everyone else has to be like subordinate. Not because of them, but because of how the other gatekeepers are with them. I'm just showing that like there are multiple women that can be headliners, because that's been one of our things where we've gone to certain clubs and they've gone like, oh, well, yeah, we'll do it as long as you get Peggy Goot a headline yeah. or you get Charlotte a headline. And we're like, it's not really about that.
Mm.
It's about the community of the party, which is something that Fabric of, you know, we've had conversations with Andy and Judy about, you know, wanting to bring community back to the dance floor on those primetime yeah. days. And like that, they really want that too. And it is actually, it's better for everyone. It's better for the scene. It's better for breaking new mm-hmm. artists. It's better for the audience's musical discovery. Like going out to clubs at the weekend shouldn't feel the same as going to a concert to see a headline thing. It should be about who you're going to meet, what the vibe of the night is, the community, like who's someone you've never heard of that's going to blow you away. Totally. And then you end up having 2 or 3 times you might see them at various festivals and clubs over the next few years, and you go on a little journey. Like, but if you always, and I guess that's another thing about pushing the message of he, she, they so publicly, and like Steve and I have been willing to be more public figures talking about it, is it's also really about the audience too. Mm. It's about people really looking at festival lineups and club lineups and thinking that when they buy that ticket, that's what they're investing their money into. And like, it's just amazing to see so many people like investing in like, you know, things that are going to grow a community and like support yeah. a wide range of artists coming through the scene and like help them have careers in music that mean they don't have to have other jobs or whatever. Like, yeah.
I don't think you realize like for me, like how important this is, what you guys are doing. And it might sound a bit weird, but because we don't know each other, but this is something that I've been talking about so many times on interviews and podcasts and with friends, with promoters, with my team. And it's about creating a community. And I think what's happened over the years, and I'm not too sure how it's happened, but it's happened over the years where it's not about the community. It's purely just a big business to sell a bunch of tickets and for people just to turn up for the headliner. And I remember, like, back years ago, you would have nights that you would go to, not because of the DJ, but because you know the people that were going to be there were going to be fun. You know the music was going to be amazing. And you trusted the party rather than the DJs. And I think there's... I don't know how it's got to where it is today, but it's so important. And I absolutely love what you guys are doing. It's fucking amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I don't know. If I was going to put my little historian hat on for a second, and I wasn't clubbing like as much before this time period. So maybe it occurred before and see what you two think as well. But like, I feel like the explosion of the EDM scene and the kind of DJs being the new rock stars being a sort of, you know, a headline across multiple articles and things, and you know, acts being able to suddenly start selling out arenas on a DJ set globally. It felt like around then, and that sort of music bleeding into the mainstream radio stations. And then I feel that slowly afterwards, that kind of culture has bled into the slightly more underground culture as well, as people have become more accustomed to seeing DJs as concerts and in that manner. That's kind of how I feel it's sort of like gone on a tangent slightly, but...
No,
I think it's because, because I'm the older one. So I was dancing at Manny Mission like almost 25 years ago.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But I shouldn't have legally been allowed in the club. I was a little tearaway, like a young Geordie Lindsay Lohan. But like, there was a lot more different types of people behind the decks then, because. And, like, there was loads of women DJs in, like, Hard House, for instance. Like, you had, like, Rachel Auburn, Lisa Lashes, yeah. Lisa Pinoff, la, la, la. Like, and, like, you had DJs like Paulette and Angel and things coming through. It was, like, you had a lot more queer DJs because also there was a lot more kind of queer nights setting the musical agenda, like, yeah. things like Out of Trade and stuff. And... like, even if you went to, like, Gay Crash or things like that, it wasn't particularly, like, just straight. It was kind of a mixture of everything.
Mm.
Then I feel like when you started getting kind of a lot of corporate entities or people with money buying out clubs,
yeah,
you got, like, and again, it's not a dig, but, like, you got a lot of straight white guys owning clubs who then employed their mate who was a booker or... they had money, so they wanted to own a club to kind of muscle flex.
Yeah.
So then, and it just is a bit of the nature of the game. It's like you tend to book people that are your friends or are like you.
Of course, yeah.
So if everybody is owned by, like, all the clubs and stuff are owned by straight white guys, and a lot of the nights then brought in were booked by straight white guys, then of course... you're going to have loads of straight white guys behind the desk. And then you have this thing that, like, and it goes back to what we're saying about, like, the black queer woman coming into a club and being, is this something for me?
Mm.
If all the people behind the decks are, like, say, either white straight guys or queer white guys, those other people just go somewhere else because they don't particularly feel that it's for them. Like, obviously you get some people come regardless, but, like, then you have this thing which we've had a battle against where people go, oh, it's kind of like it's white guys that come to these events, so that's who you need to sell to. And we're like, no, it's those people that come primarily because everything is designed for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you design something for someone and, like, of course they're going to frequent it. And if you like that, so I'm waffling a bit, but with He, She, They, because we've got different dancers, different races, sizes, body shapes, and different people on the decks, you have a completely different set of people on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Because you've declaratively said, by having different types of people behind the decks and dancing, that this is a place for multiple different people, and you can see yourself somewhere in that. I mean, say when we did Brighton Pride, it's normally just guys on the stage, and we had that as feedback as well, that we were getting a lot of queer women felt like they could be in the dance tent and felt a bit more like their own space and were invited there than before. So it's not just a straight white guy problem. It's just endemic in both things, in the queer space too. Because the queer space can be very racist, very very transphobic, very misogynist. So it also has its place. So we try to diversify those spaces too.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's just making sure that everyone is welcome, right? And I think
it's like a basic thing. Like, as this more like diverse than fucking most nightclubs.
It sounds so fucking stupid though, because by saying everyone's welcome sounds cheesy as fuck, because it's something that people have always said but not actually meant, and not kind of perceived that with what events they're booking.
But you know what? It's a funny one, because I think actually they genuinely do mean that everyone's welcome.
Yeah.
Just haven't thought, because they feel welcome, they go and extrapolate that everybody else would feel
exactly
welcome.
Yeah. It's like if you, I don't know about what you guys like to do in your personal life, but if somebody took me to an Oceania club, like, honestly, I don't feel welcome there. So I'm not going to go there. It's not because I dislike the music. It's because I can't stand the people there. And I can't relate to anyone there. So it's like, I want to create an environment where I want people to feel comfortable. And I think it's always that battle when being the DJ and kind of working with promoters as well. It's like, well, I am the normal straight white, boring DJ that everyone looks at and going, oh, he's just like another one of them. But it's
you've got a hell of a beard though, Will.
Apart from the beard, and I'm kind of a dwarf. Apart from that, like,
that's all about intersectionality. Having like short bearded men is still a thing, and I encourage it.
I'm in for it as well. But I think it's like, how would you guys say for... Like, you guys are doing an amazing thing with he, she, they, but what needs to change with the rest of the industry for it to kind of build? Because I guess I was talking to Gene Ferris on the podcast last year, and he was talking about the old days in Chicago and how we all know the house scene started in Chicago with mm-hmm. the gay black scene. And it was purely because they had nowhere else to go. That's gone. It's gone a long time ago. But how do we make everybody feel welcome when... How does the rest of the scene do what you guys are doing? Because how amazing would it be, apart from maybe business-wise, like, you guys won't...
We've always said the ultimate goal with He, She, They and the events is that we... kind of end up doing ourselves a disservice
exactly,
and putting ourselves
right.
out
yeah.
of business.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, obviously we live in a capitalist society. it's great to be able to pay rent, but we don't have this, like, we've never had this crazy desire to, like, you know, do things for the sake of money, for riches. It's not about that. We both have a really strong desire to leave the industry better than how we found it.
It feels like a passion, and that's what I love about it. It feels super authentic. I said it earlier, but it feels like a passion project rather than something that's making a shit ton of money. Whether you make a shit ton of money on top of that, great.
Very, very well perceived, to be fair.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. But I guess how does that change? How does it turn into a bigger picture? I don't know.
One of our things is just like, We evidence what we bang on about, because Sophia and I are on endless panels where people go like, oh, there's this problem. And then no fucker really solves it, and it's boring. So it's like you've got loads of people who do things as well, like Jaguar goes and like smashes it with like creating these worlds that are more diverse and educating like the next generation of like women and trans and non-binary DJs and giving them access to decks and stuff like that and production. So I think that those kind of things is like we've shown that you can totally have diverse nights and sell out big clubs in not just England, but we've done it in like Norway, India, America, Holland. We're in about 12 countries at the moment, and we're supposed to be and should have been after the pandemic in like a load more countries as they open up.
Yeah.
So we've just gone to them. Look, nothing's really changed. Like here's a model and it can work. So hopefully we allow other people to go and put on those lineups or come into those clubs I think he's not, because we weren't the first queer club ever to be in Fabric, because there had been DPTM and things like that. But I don't think that it's out of the ordinary that like things like Crossbreed and Sylvester, like the Fabric thing with Adonis, has come into those spaces, is unrelated to the fact that they started doing big Saturday nights there that showed that they could win that crowd.
Yeah.
But also, like, people like Judy's a black woman that's been fucking in London club scene for, like, what, best part of 20 years?
Yeah.
Like, and smashing it and breaking all the ceilings. So, like, I think, I think we're hopefully just showing people basically that, like, the diversity can actually work.
Yeah.
And that they could just go back to the old ways of doing stuff, because old club nights used to be booked way more diversely. And they made money.
And that's the thing. There was a happy medium, a happy balance between everything, where it was cheap to get into at the door, which for me, like, I remember going to parties and it was like £5 on the door. And you're like, this, you know, when you're spending £5 to get into a club, it's like not just about making a shit ton of money and paying a headline DJ. It's about the community. But also, I think it is about bringing back an actual scene that isn't based on headline DJs as well. And I think by doing that, it allows lots of different promoters to grow smaller scenes, which then brings in lots of more diverse artists and diverse kind of customers around every city, all around the world. But I guess, what was it like doing a show in India? Because I didn't know how does that work
we were really fortunate, because we partnered with the Kitty Sue venues. Okay. So the Kitty Sue venues are part of the Lalit Hotel Group, which are, you know, notorious in India for being LGBTQIA plus friendly. And like, the owner of the hotels is like amazing. And like, we went to the UK one, the London one, to meet him briefly. And, you know, he does amazing things, like funds all this surgery for women who've been acid attacked in India and stuff. It's like, he's an incredible guy. But obviously the rules and the legislation had only just kind of very recently changed. So I'd been to India before, like a couple of times. So I had like no trepidation about going to this country at all. But like, my dad and a few other people were like, oh my God, you're taking it to India. And I was like, that never concerned me, actually. I just like never worried. They were different. They were kind of a microcosm, but the same thing as all the other parties. The crowds were like slightly smaller, but there were still people showing up and like taking their coats off and were in drag, and had never left the house in drag before, ever. There was people coming up to me, and there was one girl at the Bangalore party who just said that she'd been asked out by another woman and that had never happened to her in a public space before, ever. A couple of the amazing hosts that we had, because there's a really small number of like working drag queens in India. Like they were explaining to me, there was only about like sort of 40 that were able to really, really sort of make the career out of it at that time. I'm hopefully it's more now, but you know, they just felt that it was so culturally important that we were there, and I didn't kind of realize how important they would be until we were living it. It was really, really special, and it felt like such a moment. And it also made me realize massively that He She They isn't just about massive raves and different things like that, and it's sometimes about those smaller events where there still might be three people whose complete perspective or lives you might change by being in that space. And they're equally as important as like us taking over a festival stage or us taking over Fabric. So it was a very, very special weekend. Yeah, it was good.
I can imagine.
Oh, we will go back.
Yeah, that, I can imagine that being pretty special. What's it like taking over a festival stage when I don't know what festivals you've taken over, so, but I can imagine festival stages, it's not necessarily your usual clientele because it's festival clientele, right? And you don't get to choose that.
That's fine though, because festivals are often kind of diverse, and also just sometimes it's like it's a little gateway into,
yeah, that's what I was going
to
say,
different types of people, yeah, to come and see it and be like, oh, okay, like this is something different. Mm. Like
people always start somewhere. Sorry, Stephen, I interrupted you. You're not finished.
No. You can interrupt me.
It's a gateway thing. So for example, Ultra Festival in Miami, it's all about, there's three or four stages where it's, yeah, you know, quite EDM focused. But I mean, the last time I went to Ultra was probably about 2015 or so. But the smaller stage, you know, the little, it's like a mini version of Arcadia that's got, you know, the likes of Tale of Us, the likes of Maya, like more underground music. And people might have bought that ticket to see, like, you know, the Calvins of the world or whoever it might be. But people do generally tend to, like, mooch around a festival and see what else is out there while they have a beer or, like, whatever they do. And, like, they might well just catch half an hour of a set and think, oh, like, that really opened my mind. Maybe I'm going to buy a ticket and go to a club to see that person next. And that is how people develop their music taste, develop their culture, like meet different people.
Yeah.
And it's so, that's why we also totally love doing those bigger festival stages, because there may be someone who was dragged along to that festival by a mate to see like a pop act or like a more mainstream dance act who loves He, She, They and thinks, oh, I've got this other friend that might be into that. Then they might buy a ticket to a club night and then they come and enter like really our world where, yeah, we can really curate and take things over in a different way. And it's nighttime and it's dark, which might not always be the case for a festival, but it's about that gateway thing, and those gigs are just as important as the India gigs being important for their reason as the taking over a club for a whole night and curating the whole thing is equally as important. Like it's all about opening people up to different things that they, different parts of themselves that they might not have realized they could tap into through like their love of music culture. So
no, I totally agree with that as well. I totally agree. Did the label come second then? Or third?
Yeah.
After fashion.
Yeah. Label was third. Like, it sort of originated just before the pandemic. And we put out a couple of records of Louisa's, who we managed. And then obviously COVID hit and, you know, no one really knew what was kind of going on for a minute. And we sort of threw ourselves into doing some streaming and stuff. We did a great stream with Beatport for Pride and some stuff with DJ Mag and some stuff with Glastonbury Greenpeace. But like the label kind of sort of kicked off. It's actually, I was going to say this to you, Brian, so in a week's time, it'll be a year since we put out Reclaim Me. And when we started our label side with ADA, so we've got kind of two strands of it. One comes out with BMG, which is Louisa's album, and then the kind of EP releases are with ADA Warners.
Yeah.
And
the first release was a Louisa one.
Yeah, I just, yeah, I said. Yeah, so it's nearly a year since the start of the ADA like EP run, and it's been mad to think that as well as Louisa's full album after those initial first two songs come out this time, there's also now been like another like 30 releases. There's been nearly one every week, basically, which has been...
You've had like 38 releases, right?
Yeah, it's hardcore.
Yeah, it's
but
amazing.
It's been amazing, and we've met so many incredible producers and different people through doing it, and like some people we've been their first release, other releases it's, you know, Cakes to Killers approached us, who we were both fans of anyway, to release, you know, a longer EP with a full remix package, or, and it's just, I kind of love the label a lot. It's a fucking lot of work running a label.
It sucks, like, doesn't it? It's a lot of work. It is.
From plugging everything in on the back end, and like obviously you've got all the asset creation, working with everyone, working with the PRs, all your personal pictures. Mm-hmm. Like, it's full on.
Yeah.
But I've been actually so amazed and in love with all the reactions that we've got, both on like club promos, like on radio, like you know, Danny Howard and Sarah Story and Jaguar in particular, although there's been other great supporters too, like Charlie T, like Charlie Hedges. Love but Charlie, like everyone's just been really getting behind the records. Mm. And it's really beautiful to see, and it's been really fun for Stephen and I to like do the A&R on stuff, you know. And we've already got like taking a like little bit of a hiatus because it's been very intense, but we've already kind of got like 6 releases queued up for the start of next year already. Sick. So it's been full on but amazing, and like we're really proud of, you know, we have no music policy for the label whatsoever. Mm. So like you might listen to one promo and it's like heavy techno, and then the next might be more ethereal, the next might be deep house. Like we just love stuff that we love, and we're lucky in that we have a similar taste.
And I think this is a really interesting thing that I've noticed as well from the He She They brand and the label is, because you guys aren't DJs and you're not running the label as DJs, which most labels nowadays are DJ kind of orientated, you can actually allow the label to be as creative as possible. Whereas I find a lot of DJ forwarded labels are just purely for like one sound and very niche. Yeah. And it kind of alienates everybody, right? As producers, we all write lots of different music. And it's one of the reasons why I started my label in 2020, because I was just kind of fed up with sending, like, me trying to be an artist and sending music that people wouldn't necessarily expect from me, or me trying to evolve, but the label's just being like, no, it doesn't sound like our record label.
This is it. It pigeonholes.
Yeah.
The person as well. It's like, so they build a weird prison for themselves. Mm. And we were very conscious of not doing that with the club night, of having, we'll have more house lineup or more techno lineup or something a bit bassier or whatever. I mean, like we did a trans inclusive remix album for Alanis Morissette with people like getting Eris Drew to remix Alanis Morissette. It was like, like, it was just really a fun thing to do, because Alanis is such a big feminist that we liked the idea of making sure that other feminists saw that she was trans inclusive and fighting that fight too. And she, bless her, on some quarters got like some backlash of like, oh, she's Alanis is disappointed me. She's back in trans rights. It's like, cool. Like, you took time out of your day to write that you don't like Alanis Morissette because she wants to fight for everyone. Like, you're a dick. But like, one day Sophia and I will program like a stage where we'll do like He She They, and it's a hip hop stage with like Young MA and Cakes the Killer and Leaf and Zebra Cats and all these like amazing, say, queer hip hop artists. Or like, we'll just, you know, we'll do stuff in these different kind of modalities. You could do something that was more rock focused with like people like St. Vincent and things at the helm, and all these other artists, because still at festivals, there's such a discrepancy about the amount of female artists that are platformed, the amount of artists of colour that are platformed that aren't just like from hip hop, or like, you know, if like queer artists at like, say, Wireless or things like that. Totally. Like, dance was like the thing that we know and are kind of famed for, but it's not like where our musical love lies, and it's not where the problem starts and ends.
Totally.
Because like, it's a societal problem, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Because like, dance is just a microcosm of a bigger society, because the people who DJ to the people who go there to the people who own the clubs are all just part of society.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think like, as time goes on, you'll see us evolve, which I hope is not perceived, and we'll probably have to battle about it, like, oh, they're sold out because they put Lizzo on somewhere. Like, nah, man, like, it's about doing bigger and bigger and bigger change.
It's a bigger, it's the bigger picture model, right? And the more people you kind of can reach out to, the more likely things will change on a bigger scale. And at the end of the day, that's what you've kind of put out to do. And you have to go big to do that. It's great all staying underground and cool, but that doesn't actually do what you set out to do.
Like the echo chamber thing from before.
We've got so many amazing friends who choose to like dress or like present like, you know, maybe differently from what the societal norm might be. Like, I want them to not get things said to them walking in the street or like at worst, like be attacked or like be spat at, which we've heard about. Like, the more we can encourage people to integrate and like normalize everyone being different and in the same spaces together, like, those sort of things will, fingers crossed, like ripple out. And like, it's just about changing. If you can change like the little bit around you that you have the power to change, but if everybody did that, there would be lots more change. So totally. I think we're just trying to do the bit based from the privilege that we sit in and that we've got and the position that we were in. And like, hopefully that grows.
No, I totally agree. And I think I guess we're all singing from the same song sheet, right? Like we're in agreement. But I think the thing that blows my mind is that there's people in society that actually want everyone to just abide by the same rules of what you should and shouldn't be doing. And for me, that just is mind blowing because it's like, I don't want anyone to be the same as me. I don't want anyone necessarily to have the same views as me. I think we live in a society now where we're not even allowed our own opinions to a certain extent because...
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You'll get cancelled or you'll get this or you'll get that or it doesn't align with somebody else's views or opinions. And I think
Do you know what? On cancel culture, I kind of don't believe that it's a true thing because, like, if you look at a lot of the DJs that were cancelled, like, Tim Walz is still getting booked. Yeah. Like there's, you know, like I think it's a misnomer, like, the cancelled thing. I think that it's good to, when someone does something, like, for instance, what he said about, like, the queer community was kind of atrocious, that the queer artists are allowed, and people who just dissent in his views are allowed to not want to play with them, and audiences don't need to buy a ticket to go and see them. It's like, if they want to be platformed by someone, that's cool. Everything you do, good or bad, has a consequence to someone or somebody else. And it's like, I believe in the right to for anybody to say whatever they want, even if it dissents with my view.
Totally.
But there's still a consequence. And that's the thing of, like it can't be divorced from that.
Yeah.
I can't say to you, like, oh, well, I hate you and I think your music's shit, and then you have to like me because, like, I should have some kind of impunity. Like, that doesn't work like that.
No, I totally agree.
And I, and I, I think it is important to meet people that are outside your bubble, which again is like he, she, they. We say we're a brave space rather than a safe one, because I think one of the most dangerous things that kind of with social media is not about just people putting like Photoshop pictures themselves, which is bad, but it's like it's that algorithmic thing about only seeing things that are salient to you. Like say on Facebook, when you had like the Trump stuff kind of going on, you had people who had looked at some right wing articles constantly being fed right wing stuff, and people on the left who had like looked at left wing stuff only been shown left stuff. So there was no kind of like medium of opinion. It just people just kept pushed further and further out, and like. I'm probably more of a lefty. Well, I am more of a lefty, to be fair. I'm a big, big old socialist. But I think it's still important. And I go to this like Russian spa where you get hit by leaves. It's really odd place, right? But it's like rabbis and
is it a proper Schwitz?
And all these things. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's in the middle of an industrial state in Canontown, and it looks like it's where you go to die. But there's this total group of people that I would never be around, like, you know, black cab drivers and things like that. And it was really healthy hearing why somebody had voted for Brexit.
Yeah.
Now, I was a Remainer, all the rest of it. But it's kind of good to have that thing of like someone who wasn't. It wasn't that they were being racist. They genuinely believed the 350 million on the side of a bus.
Yeah.
And it's like. Also, like, I reckon if you read the papers, you need to read The Guardian and you need to read The Mail and you need to read, like, two or three other things and know that the truth probably lies somewhere within those different influences. Somewhere,
yeah, totally.
Because we all have to live together, so it's important to understand how someone else came to that conclusion, even if it's just it helps you debunk it. And I found it really weird within dance culture the amount of people that seem to be sharing like QAnon conspiracies.
Yeah.
And I was just like that one about where it was saying like 2 million kids get disappeared every year in America. And I was like, there's quite a few people on my stream had shared it. And I was like, so of those 2 million kids that have therefore 2 million mums, 2 million dads, and that happens say every year for 10 years, just out of mums, dads and kids, that's 60 million people affected, let alone siblings, aunties and uncles today. And I said to them, like, do you know anybody who's, like, personally, do you know anyone in your direct community, the kid that got kidnapped or disappeared? No. Now, do you not think that it is odd that in 10 years, with 60 million people directly affected, that all these people have managed to skate around and not seen it? It's just... Or that Hillary Clinton eats fucking kids. It's just like, or the Wayfarer thing about, you know, kids being transplanted in fucking, like, wardrobes. It's like, just, I know we're all in lockdown and there was this kind of weird boxing mentality, but it was people that I would have otherwise thought were smart that were thinking it. And there was like, now, Sophia and I are quite spiritual beings, but there's quite a lot of people who, I guess, who do spirituality, but maybe are spiritual because they want something to believe in an almost cult-like way.
Yeah.
And therefore susceptible to other cult-like messaging, be it nefarious or be it good. So, yeah, I feel like I emotionally drained myself out for the first 6 months of lockdown, just being like, why do you think that?
Like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah, but I think you're 100% right. And it goes back to the club culture. It's about allowing people to have their own opinions and be able to talk about them and be able to. But as long as people are willing to learn from others and accept others' opinions and accept other people as how they are. But I also think, which I'm pretty sure both of you would agree, is the whole club culture is about escapism. It is about escaping kind of reality of normal everyday life, mundane everyday life. For a lot of people that come to our shows, they don't like their job. They work 9 to 5s. They don't feel accepted in society. They don't have the most pretty lives and come into a club and feeling welcome and listening to great music and being in a community where everyone is accepting of everyone is super important.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, we did a mental health first aid course as well. And a point that we've like laughingly joked to each other about since was there was a sort of diagram about like this, like stress valve and how everyone needs to like turn the tap on of their stress valve and just like let everything that's like build up out. And it's like, that's what club culture is for so many people. Like it's all about that Friday or Saturday night. It's all about that ticket that they've booked that's happening in 6 weeks that they're going with three mates that they don't see very often, or like it's a reason for people to get together with their existing community to go and feel part of something and just actually, as you say, like escape the daily grind and the daily stresses. But if we make certain groups of people feel that they're not welcome in certain spaces or not represented in order to feel truly welcome in certain spaces, that they're all still people who've dealing with things that, you know, like needing their downtime, needing their stress release valve as well. So then we're kind of like forcing people into certain spaces and doing different things. And it should just be about everyone.
No, I agree.
Everyone being welcome for sure.
I did love
when I was a kid just going to these wild places that were like I remember going to Manu Mission and just being like, oh man, I'm alive, or Gatecrasher or Sun Essential, and being this little white working class kid who at the time was straight, he thought, or denied.
Hopefully one day, Stephen, we'll have a night in Ibiza. We'll have to let you come full circle back to the podium, maybe.
Well, yeah, especially now we've got a body positive stance that I can be a bigger boy and still
most die. Welcome. You got the moves. We're here to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a manumission story. Actually, when I used to live in Ibiza,
you look too young, man.
I'm 31 and I was living out there when I was young. I was 17.
Oh, fair. I'm like 39, so I was
My ex-girlfriend used to dance with Manumission. And the last year when they were at Amnesia, they, for some reason, there was like two nights where they just couldn't get enough dancers. I used to drive to Ibiza from the UK, so I'd always drive my girlfriend to work, and then I got a text going, we need a dancer, can you come and dance? And I was like, you really don't want me to dance? And they got me peeling carrots and handing out popcorn in the crowd, walking around.
Peeling carrots.
Yeah, it was the wildest.
What did they specifically use the carrots for? Was it a healthy snack alternative to the popcorn?
They literally just wanted me to go around the crowd. I brought one of my mates with me to go around the crowd and peel carrots in front of people's faces. That's all they wanted, and I'm like, This is fucking wild.
Kind of like visual ASMR, and it's just trippy.
Yeah.
Because that was the best thing about it. I mean, like, when I've done so many missions, because Fernando was hollering out cantaloupes with his dick, and I was like, lols. And Claire had been like, don't be a dick. Don't, like, laugh at them. And, like, we were randoms in the crowd.
Yeah.
She's like, you wouldn't do it. So I just disrobed and danced, and she was like, oh, fair. Then we went back to the motel in Jesus and all this, but It was very like, it wasn't like you had to be a trained dancer or anything like that. It was very much just your attitude.
Yeah, it was to be fair, it was about the like, it wasn't about the music at all for me. My experiences in Manumission, it was about the show and about like the like wow factor of people aren't used to this and people aren't experiencing this on their normal Saturday night in their town or wherever they're from. This is like real, unless you live in Berlin or something like that, this is like real interesting stuff. And but sadly I feel that Ibiza doesn't have that anymore.
I feel like it misses a night for like people like me that were just would consider themselves a little club freak.
I agree, yeah.
Want to be weird. I mean, I guess you had...
Supermarché.
We were supposed to be in DC 10 last year. And we want to bring, like, proper weirdness to the island. Like, because at the moment, if you are someone like that, like, does Ibiza really, like, is it somewhere you even want to go? No. Like, why would you just go to Berlin, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can be fully free in Berlin, right? Yeah,
same with Amsterdam, it's backwards, because, again, it's where we are at Ibiza is from where we kind of started with, like, you know, Ibiza was a land of protest and a place for all the exiles I forget the military leader of the time.
Oh, I forgot as well.
Oh, God, this is going to... It wasn't Tito, was it?
What year was
Spanish
it?
I'm going to Google Spanish dictator. But,
was it in the 60s?
I think it was General Franco, maybe.
Francis Franco?
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, a little Googled history lesson. But, like, you know, they've gone and had been ports and stuff, and, like, they turned this farmhouse pasha and stuff into a club, and it was just, like, and I really love going to, like, High and Ushuaia and things like that. Like, I love going in the teepee and High and just being there for 9 hours. But, like, I do think that, as well as, like, bottle service stuff, it just needs something that's just a good old sweaty throwdown.
Raw, yeah.
And every fucker says it, but, like, Space, back in the day, when Space used to have 24-hour raves and, like, Danny Tenaglia would somehow not pee for, like, 12 hours and do these sets. And it was genuinely amazing that you'd have, like, Jean-Paul Gaultier next year, and then you'd have, like, a big drag queen, and then you'd have, like, a builder from Hull.
Yeah.
Then you'd have a working-class kid like me from Sunderland, all just in one space.
Yeah.
Just fucking, like, I guess there was no camera phones as well, so people were just being sweaty messes, and it was fine, and it was like I still find it weird when people, like, oh, like, they're dancing with their tops off, like that's, like, a weird negative thing, or that, like,
it was like the thing. Everyone,
unless you've got a six pack, like, fuck that. Like,
yeah,
you're in a club, like, you're there to dance, like get sweaty, and, like, I don't have, like, any time for anyone who wants to look perfect by the time that they leave a club. Like, if you're a drag queen, even, like, even though you've hairsprayed your face, it should be, like, dripping down your, like, face like a jilted bride, your makeup, and just everyone just be a fucking mess.
Yeah, no, and, I agree.
And I love that about Panorama Bar. And it's not just about being a Panorama Bar in Bergen. It's about that feeling of anything can go. You can go have an ice cream, or you can go and get fisted. All in, like, and it's fine. It's all fine. Yeah. Like, and you have people that are dressed in, like, whatever, next to someone else just in black t-shirt and jeans. And everyone coexists. And, like... It's a weird one, because when you say it to people, like, oh, Panorama Bar, it does feel a bit sometimes like people are just saying it to say it sometimes, where it's like, it's just the thing that it represents when you're inside of just complete freedom. And there's, like, there's never violence. Like, you never see a fight in people. You never see, like...
I've never been.
Have you not?
No.
It's so freeing, like...
It is. It's really great. I've had some very special moments in there and lost days as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Definitely.
So book out the calendar when Sophie is off to Berlin. And Glastonbury.
No work is going to happen.
And Glastonbury. I'm a shell of my form. There's just something that happens to me. Like, the moment I step on that Glastonbury site.
And I wonder what it is.
And I just, but I'm honestly in one of my happiest states at that festival than I think I ever am.
It's amazing. I used to go with my dad years ago, because it's like 15 minutes from my house when I'm in the UK, and
well, amazing.
It's like That festival is, and I still haven't played it as well. And it's like, for me, it's like something that, you know, when you have like these career goals and you're like, there's like, that's one of them that I'm just like, I don't know why I haven't played it, but I just, it's something that I'd be like, when I've played that, I'm kind of like, all right, I'm done now for a bit.
Yeah.
So are you guys planning Ibiza with the brand?
We will. We're definitely doing. I'm sure we're allowed to say it.
You're not allowed to say.
We definitely will be back on the island in some form in 2022, and we hope that our relationship with the island can grow as the next few years progresses, and we would love to bring a little taste of what we do and some more weirdness back to the island. It's definitely a goal of ours in general, for sure.
I can't wait to see that because it needs it and I'm all for it. So
it is. I think it'll get progressively weirder. I think what we realized is sometimes you need to like knock the door down a bit first and then like more and more and more. Because sometimes people are like for our bookings to like, to see that maybe we're like not mainstream but like a bit more kind of the center of
you need to ease people in and loop them up, you know, just like little bit at a time.
Can't go balls deep straight away.
But the ultimate, we want people to build up trust in a brand. Like, we want to be able to put on shows where we just say that it's a they show, the venue and the date, and that people start to really trust what the vibe is going to be like, what the entertainment's going to be like, what the music. I mean, obviously the music policy like does differ across genre. We don't want to pigeonhole ourselves, but to trust the curation that it will be something worth coming to, and we want to start selling things based on that. But we understand that, you know, everyone needs to prove themselves a little bit first, so we're willing to do the dance.
Because now you see, like, with our program and as it progresses, that it gets more and more like underground into a space where, and like also just smaller names, like, because like one of our favorite DJs, like, is a woman called is a trans woman called Jay Ward, and who is now actually really smashed it to support Roisin Murphy on tour, but like because of like that the trans there's some spaces that were maybe off limits to or bookers like passed on by or whatever, but is probably like the best DJ pretty much like in the UK or one of the best in the world. So it's like having someone there that people see isn't just booked because she's a trans DJ, but it's booked because she's just a fucking amazing selector.
Yeah.
And that you can bring people into that journey that, like Sophia says, we wanted so that they, when it goes on sale, just gets sold out. And then it's like you actually realise that the curation is just really good and you are going to have, like, just the best music thrown at you. And the popular doesn't always equal best.
Mm.
Like, you know, like, look at Honey Dijon as an artist. Like, it's just as good now as she was 10 years ago, like, all these things. But it's suddenly got that thing where she's everywhere and been allowed to be embraced in with Blessed Madonna and things like that. Like, it wasn't that they suddenly got good at what they do.
Totally, yeah. It's just it's timing, isn't it, as well? Right. It takes time.
It's frustrating. You have to prove to so many people that you can make the money. And then once you have, then like, cool.
Yeah.
But then that's that thing that you said, like, sometimes it's performative. Sometimes it's genuine, like, because they always love Blessed Madonna. And sometimes it's like, oh, we need a female DJ and they're the ones. Whereas, like, when people really love like diversity, it's at all rungs. It's not just a big fuck off headliner.
Yeah.
It's like who the support act is. Because also you need to start putting like artists of colour and queer artists and female artists and non-binary artists in support slots as well.
Totally.
Because otherwise how the fuck do they
grow.
Because that's what part of the thing we're doing with He, She, They is like almost, you know, like having our under 21s.
Mm.
And it's what Jagu is doing with her.
TH1000 project.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like allowing that next generation to come through. And it's happening, and it's not just our night either. Like, we'll stress, like, there's other nights that are really diverse, and like Little Gay Brother's really good at being diverse, that is also in our city in London, and there's just lots of collectives all around the world. So like, we don't think that like we're suddenly the people that have like completely invented diversity in dance totally. Music. If anything, we're harking back to the olden days and dragging music back to a time when it was progressive, if that isn't some kind of like paradoxical situation.
I think it's really important, and I think did Printworks do it the other day?
Where, they did.
Yeah, they where did. They just and they just said tickets are on sale. You're not going to know the lineup. And I think that it kind of what you were saying just a minute ago with what you guys are doing is announcing shows without lineups and stuff like that. Like, that's what it used to be like. That's space. And I don't. It's very easy for us all to be like, oh, the good old days were, it like back in the day was better and things like that. And I'm all for progressing forward. But there's sometimes you do actually have to be like, well, actually, no, it was better. And it did create a better environment for everybody. And I think that is the case in this situation. But it's nice to see people do that. And especially the clubs like Printworks that they can do that, if you know what I mean. And I think it's really exciting for actually the community of people that go to clubs to like just be like, I trust these people. I trust the bookers. I trust the brand. I know what I'm going to get, that I'm going to like it no matter what. I think it's important.
Yeah, agreed.
We've just done an hour and 10 minutes. Let's wrap it up. Thank you very much for coming on. I like really enjoyed this conversation. It was really nice.
Me too.
You guys were great.
And if you
and Stephen is ever modest,
so that's I joke. I jest.
I know.
Yeah, like keep me up to date with everything you're doing. I will promote anything you want on the podcast. Anything you guys want to kind of get involved in, just let me know, and I'm all over it. I love what you guys are doing.
One day when we own Glastonbury, we'll have to get you to come.
Keep saying.
I would have thought you'd play at Glastonbury. Actually, that surprised me.
I don't play in the UK. Like, I don't very rarely get booked in the UK. I'm playing with Maya this weekend, actually.
Yeah, you're doing Mint Festival, right?
Yeah, which should be fun.
So you released on Trick, right?
Yeah, I've released on them last year, and got a release coming out at the end of this month with them.
Yeah, like Patrick's a big sweetheart.
He's wicked, man. He's wicked.
And is, you know, bit by bit trying to be more diverse and like his lineups and stuff like that, and gets that there's a problem. Because I think he's in a position where he can actually affect change.
Especially in the UK market. Like, he's the one at this moment in time, and I think people really trust him as a brand. And I don't mean like he's very like, what's the word? He's very down to earth, I guess, on everything. Like, his socials are very down to earth. People can relate to him. And I think he at this moment in time, he's like one of the biggest artists in the UK.
He definitely is. And to be fair, if everyone was eagle-eyed, you'd see that he likes and supports so much He, She, They stuff. And bless him, has like, before we got to this like new wave of like He, She, They is definitely on a rise, like right at the start, he was like, oh, I'd love to come play for you. Like, I really believe in the thing. Mm. Like, and there's a couple of times where actually because of pandemic that there were things where he was going to play that got cancelled and stuff. So like it's quite nice. Like Mike Melody's another one who, like, Melody really gets diversity and it's like amazing. Dennis Salter, like, some really good guys in like those positions of
power. And Eats as well, very much so.
Yeah, of course. That are, you know, straight white guys that really want to try and help platform people and do stuff. I mean, Eats and Melody and Dennis in particular have like played loads of queer parties.
Yeah.
And what we were saying when we had this chat with Melody at a festival is just like, it's so important what they're doing, because without the support of straight white men, then
it's not going to go anywhere.
It really won't ever have long-term effectual change. Totally. It takes them bringing their audiences in. It takes them shouting about it in the same way as that DaBaby can make those horrific comments at that festival. And you then, I mean, as much as he's a dick, the most damaging thing is not necessarily what he thinks. It's what he's giving license to his audience to post and think. And when I read through the Instagram comments on like some of the posts on his page around that time, I was like horrified that that is, it just allowed so much hate to brew in those spaces. And that's the most dangerous thing about it, which is why when we've got these advocates speaking out in favour of supporting all of these like other parts of society, that affects change in a positive way, because no one who like idolises Melody as a DJ, as another straight white bloke in like, be it Doncaster, be it Leeds, be it whatever, is going to want to storm into Melody's comments when Melody's supporting, say, a night like He She Don't, like, oh, what the fuck, mate, this is so shit, like, fuck all those people. Yeah. Like, they're just not. Yeah. And they're going to think, even if maybe like someone wanted to, they're going to think about the fact that someone they look up to is supporting this. And it just makes people think. And that's, So these allies are just so incredibly important in like long-term.
I think it's massively. I think it's super important.
It normalizes stuff as well.
Totally.
Like, and you know, for women to eventually get the vote, it did take men to allow that.
Yeah.
For queer people like me to have marriage rights, it did take straight people to vote for them. Like, whoever is in that position of power or the majority, like, the kind of the power holders, you do need them on side, because, like, you know, there were people campaigning for queer rights the whole time, and same with trans rights, but you need those people that are cis or straight to go in for battle. Otherwise it doesn't change, because minorities can't change things alone.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really important. And you, Will, giving us this platform is, again, like they're all things that people can do. You have a platform, and you're platforming a gay guy and a woman to talk about their experiences in dance music and how it can change. Like, it's important. And it probably wasn't your thought process of like, kind of like white savior, I'm going to help the world. You just did it because you instinctively wanted to help.
Well, so. I think the thing that the way that I look at it, and it, for me, it's I know where this scene came from, and I know, for me, I know the morals why I make music and why I DJ and why I want to be in clubs and kind of why I want people in front of me listening to the music. And the only reason why I do it is to give people a good time. I don't do it for any other reason. Everything else after that is kind of just the benefits, right? Like, actually it being a job is amazing. But we would all carry on doing this if there wasn't money at the end of it. We all did it for years before we earned any money.
Well, as you say, I slept on couches for about 2 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I also, that's one thing we should say is like, Sophia and I own this like independently. There's like, we most definitely are not trust fund kids. And over lockdown, my entire life savings went because we didn't get government help.
Totally.
And I've moved back in with my family because it was either go and get a corporate job and give up He She They or start a record label and a podcast and keep doing He She They and move back in with my dad for a bit.
And
so it really does come from like you were saying before, like a place of love and wanting to change. It like we both could get A&R jobs at major record labels. We could go and work for like promoters. We turned down a whole bunch of stuff because we really believe in it. Maybe it's stupid, but we do really believe in it. And if we keep grafting it, like we will help genuinely change dance music or be a catalyst to, in our little space, to go help change things. But yeah, sometimes it's really frustrating because people like see the big parties and are like, oh, you must be like completely loaded and like la la la. It's like we haven't worked for 18 months and we manage DJs but like
they haven't worked 20, as well.
20% of nothing is nothing. And we had staff that we were still paying and all the rest of it. And like, yeah, we didn't get like furlough because we were company directors. So we were part of the 2 million that just got totally fucked.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like not just a little violin thing, but like that's the only thing that frustrates me is when it kind of gets called into question that like, oh, you're doing this for the money. And it's like, if you saw our bank account and the different opportunities elsewhere that we could have made money that we turned down, you'd realize why that was like such a cunty wrong comment.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, it doesn't happen a lot, but it's just when I do see it, I'm like,
rah. I think for me, the thing is that I don't know about you guys, but I'm happy doing what I do. And most of my, like, I literally this morning, one of my best mates from school, he's in business law in like a huge law firm in London, earns obscene amounts of money. And literally, we spent an hour of him going, I fucking can't stand my job. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. I just want to go and escape. And it's like, although we all have stresses in our work, I can't speak for you, but for me, I still can wake up every day and go, yeah, it's stressful. We have some hard times, but it's fucking so much fun. And if we can help people have a good time whilst we're having a good time, we're the ones winning in this whole society. It's not, you can't be the richest one in the graveyard.
Oh yeah. Like this is, well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, we've obviously made a choice between doing something that, you know, I got like a master's degree in business psychology, like I had different jobs at various points when I was doing consultancy and stuff that like, I could have done that and carried on and made money. And I also worked a whole bunch of shitty jobs as well. Yeah. But like we're just like, I mean, some of them weren't even, I was going to say we're fine, but some of them weren't even fine. But like, it also just motivates you. And it's like, I don't need to be rich. I would like to not have to like worry about paying my rent or that like how much this like food item costs or whatever. Yeah, like,
totally.
Like that, like, and before I've had more money than I have now. And like, I've been less happy when I was doing business psychology stuff. It just like part of that thing is doing like culture change, which actually is a posh word of just saying that you sack people really. Like, and it's just, it's awful. Like, I sacked because I made the company really efficient, they ended up letting go loads of people before Christmas once. And I was just like, nah, man, this isn't how I get paid.
Yeah.
And no disrespect, because obviously all those jobs need to exist in the world, but just like, I'd rather be happy and poor than like fucking miserable and rich.
Totally.
But I'd rather be, I think, just like the middle ground.
Like, yeah, but it's also, right, I guess, like, also by doing what you guys do, like, you manage a shit ton of artists. You are helping people create their dreams as artists, right? That's I can imagine that being a very fulfilling feeling when it goes right.
Exactly. I think people don't realize how much work that is as well, because our artists insane. Are like, proper producer artists, so like Maya will release in 40 countries.
Yeah.
Like the amount of work that goes into into that. And historically, we managed like Tale of Us and Magda, and like when KDA was my flatmate, we managed him and he went to number one in the UK charts on his first single when he was my flatmate. So that was intense.
Yeah.
Because it's like 2 a.m. and you're just like, Sophia and I were deciding, do we go up against One Direction or like Adele? And we went up against One Direction because we had to change the release date of the single. Like things like that. Like that's bizarre. Like Sophia, me, best mate, all just in the house, like figuring out like
what the fuck to do. Become
number one in the charts. And the weirdest thing about that, if anything, was that like, so like you're number one in the charts and it's like, oh, nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Like that's a really weird thing. If like, a week later you're not, and I'm not going to say we, because I guess my expectancy was like, oh, this is going to be
change the world.
So different and like, and it isn't really like, and it's almost slightly anticlimactic.
Totally. I think that's what creative lives are like, right? I don't know how you guys work as management, but like when I'm working with Ryan, like we're working towards different kind of increments, different goals, and each goal kind of leads to something else and something else, but there's not one goal that changes your whole life really.
I think the challenge there, and I was having a conversation with some friends about this, so some of the challenge is to, because there's always so many goals, there's always this release date, there's this party, there's this, there's whatever, it's very difficult sometimes to enjoy the journey because of the pace of what we do, and as you say, because there's all these different trajectories and things to work towards. And then when the thing that might have been the goal 2 months ago is like happening, like, yeah, it's happening and like you are enjoying it and everything's in progress. But then you know, you got 70 emails about the next six things that are happening. And it's a real challenge to stay present and kind of, try and enjoy the day to day.
And so the weirdest thing is often it's like most people's most successful song is not their favorite song.
Yeah.
Like it's normally the most artistically simple songs that work the best. And you can do something really clever, really smart, which is like, you know, like
look at Maya.
yeah. Like what they say is not her favorite song.
Yeah. I could have guessed that. I love the record, but I could have guessed that that is not her favorite song she's written.
Yeah, because as a producer, like the things that she is capable of are displayed way better elsewhere. And just the fact that she can make a hip hop record with Young M.A. and like Gangsta Boo, and she can then go and make a dance record with Kim and Foxman, or she can make an instrumental that has a classical fusion to it, or she could go make techno as Kai. I'm like,
she's amazing.
And she just produced a song for Sting on his like,
really?
Album.
Wow.
Yeah, she got sound by Nicki Minaj. Like, all of the things. And this is just like, she also works in like dubstep. She's done drum and bass. And she's done jungle. And she's done all of the things. And like, she produced Shaylu's album that's like kind of a bit more like acoustic and guitar led. And like, well, a lot of the songs on that. So like, it's quite funny when people are like, and what they say, and it's just like you can see, like yeah, I'm very much more than that.
But I think
like Scott Walker is a really good example who passed away. Like Scott Walker is like, the sun ain't gonna shine anymore with all like the Walker brothers.
Yeah,
but then like his album's on 4AD where his percussive line is like people at an abattoir pounding meat, and it's just like. That's the stuff he wins the awards for, but then like the stuff that everyone sings at karaoke is like the stuff from the 60s, and I think you can't look for artistic satisfaction by selling units or doing anything like that. If you're actually a creative person and like not just a pop star who's a vehicle for to get, like, sing someone else's song and go do X, Y, and Z. But if you're an actual artist, you can only ever make music that you like and then put it out to the world and hope that someone else likes it.
Yeah.
If you make music for other people, because we've seen so many examples of this, and again, not to name names, but like, where they go, oh, I wish I had a career like Maya, because like, they feel that they made records to try and satisfy their market or to try and get DJ bookings. They don't love those records, and now they're unable to go in the other directions, they feel. And it's like, great, you've got the money, but you don't actually like the career, and that's kind of what you're lumbered with. I just feel that's, yeah, you could, like if you have the goal of just having money or just, like, loads of people, like, streaming your record or whatever, or, like, or even artistic, like, interpret, like, validation from others' critical acclaim.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. You just have to make music that you like and put it out there and hope it connects. It's the only way that we've ever seen artists really happy.
It's the only way. And I can, from my experience in the past, I've gone through parts of my career where I feel like I have to write music to fit into the record labels that I was known for. And it got to the point where I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't play this music anymore. Like, we evolve as humans. Like,
yeah, our
tastes change, and we have to allow ourselves to do that. And by putting ourselves in boxes and just doing what is commercially what people expect from us, like, it's so demoralizing. And I was lucky that I worked it out and changed, but I've got so many friends, and I'm sure you guys know a lot of people that, yeah, they're successful, but they hate it. And honestly, if I hated being a DJ and being a producer, it's quite possibly the worst job, because the money can be amazing, but the amount of hours you have to work for it to do well is easier to go get a corporate job.
Well, this is it. You may as well get a corporate job and then make music for fun.
For fun, yeah, exactly, exay.
Because it is hard. Like, the minute that music's a job, then there are elements of it where it's a job.
Yeah. Oh, of course. And I think what you guys do as managers as well is you get the brunt of it, because you get all the stress, and then
we do God's work.
Yeah, well, good managers. Good managers do God's work. I totally agree with that. I totally agree. I love my manager, so it's all good.
Big up, Ray.
Guys, thank you so much. It's been really nice.
Second attempt to wrap up the interview.
It's all right. I'm not in any rush. I just know that you guys have got a phone call in 20 minutes. I could literally just keep going. Do.
This is how the RA one lasts for like 2 hours.
I know. Bless Marcus. He just should have been firmer to stop us. Shut us up.
No, I like it. I
once had a conversation with DJ Paulette. I kid you not, for 5 hours.
Yeah, we all had to take toilet breaks.
But hey, like,
incredible, that woman.
I don't know about you guys, but like, this conversation would never have happened if we didn't have this podcast. I think it's important that we not just us have this conversation, but people hear this conversation. It's really important to me anyway. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Keep in touch.
And thank you for anyone who lasted to this point in the podcast.
Troopers, literally.
If you're seeking out further podcasts, obviously listen to all the rest of Will's podcasts, and then RR Exchange is a good another nearly 3 hours for you.
Before we wrap up, how can people...
Watch your film, because it's...
Lord of the Rings, the extended version.
Before we wrap up, how can people follow you and kind of get involved with the brand?
So probably the best way to see, like, in real time, all the things to get involved with is our Instagram page. And then from there, you can find links out to sort of clothing, the record label, the events. We didn't even touch on this at all, but there's going to be
website.
The website, but I still think the Instagram's better.
No, because the Instagram's also it feeds to.
Oh, it's a Tumblr. Yeah, it feeds.
You go on the mailing list, and then we got
yes,
things at you.
Yeah. We didn't even touch on this at all in the interview, but we're actually launching a He She They app in the coming couple of months, which is going to be like a global sort of social networking / dating app where all of the events and the labor and everything will be incorporated into it. So that's just a slight little side project we've been working on.
That's a dope idea. I like that. Let me know when it's out and I will put that everywhere. That's a great idea. I like that a lot. I really like that.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Will. This has been so fun.
It's been amazing. Keep safe. And hopefully catch you soon. Bye guys.
See you soon.
Bye. And that is a wrap. Thank you so much for Sophia and Stephen to get involved. That was a really good podcast. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you to listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Share it with your friends. Do all of the good stuff. Keep safe. See you next time.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.